Morning, everyone. The Senate Education Committee will come to order. Today's Thursday, May 7, 2015. It's 8:30. We're in room 112 at the State Capitol. Today, we have four confirmation boards to review, and we will hear from nominees from those boards. First, we have the board of the Purpich Center for Arts Education, and before us will be nominee Linda Henning. Welcome.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity. My name is Pierce McNally, and I'm the chairman of the Purpich Center for Arts Education Board of Directors. I'm serving in my second term, and it's been an honor to do so. One of the things that I appreciate is the advice and counsel of a strong board, and I'm happy to introduce for your consideration today the confirmation of Linda Henning to our board, who would make a wonderful addition, and I'll turn it over to her.
Thank you very much. Welcome, Ms. Henning. Please.
Good morning, Chair Weger and committee members. It's good to be here.
And for the tape, please state your name and your reasons for seeking the appointment. And
my name is
about your vision, you know, the reasons.
Thank you. My name is Linda Henning, and I'm seeking the appointment of to be a board member of Purpich Center for Arts Education for several reasons. One is I would like to be part of assuring that there are adequate resources and funding for Purpich Center for Arts Education in the future. And also, because I grew up in a rural part of Minnesota, and because I personally benefited from a fairly strong arts education at the time, I want to be part of assuring that Purpich continues to be an agency that provides benefits in education throughout the state.
Thank you. Senator Dahl.
Ms. Henning, I know one of the thank you for being here, by the way. I know that one of the real strong aspects of what the Purpich Center does is outreach for teachers around the state. And I hope that, give me your vision on that. Is that something that will remain strong in terms of, you know, being a resource for our teachers and our schools?
Yes, that is part of the Purpich Center's vision and one that I fully support. I think that arts education, which is education in as well as through the arts, has benefited many students in Minnesota, including my own daughter. And because of my personal experience with her being at the Arts High, I think I've witnessed the value of receiving an education in and through the arts.
Thank you. Senator Dahl?
Thank you. And again, my teachers down in Northfield over the years have really talked strongly or really positively about what Purpich has done for them in terms of their programming for teachers around the state. So thank you.
Thank you.
Further questions, the committee? We do have a quorum. Two members that did come in are in another meeting, but we do have a quorum. That's acknowledged, and Senator Dahl would like to make a motion.
Mr. Chair, I move the confirmation of Linda Henning for the Board of Purpich Center for the Arts Education.
Further discussion? Not all in favor, indicate aye.
Aye. Aye.
Thank you very much for your service.
Thank you.
Next, the Board of School Administrators, Ms. Haar and Ms. Antoine. And again, in whichever order you prefer, state your name for the tape and your reasons for seeking appointment.
Good morning. Welcome as well. I guess I'm not saying welcome. Glad you're here, and I'm glad I'm here.
Yes, me too.
Jean Haar. I serve as the Dean for the College of Education at Minnesota State Mankato. I am looking at a third term with the Board of School Administrators. My background briefly, high school English teacher, high school principal, came to Mankato as a faculty in ed leadership, so that was the school leadership preparation programs for all of our school administration. Entered into the service of the Board of School Administrators at that time, and then as I moved into the dean role, I now currently am involved in a college that does teacher prep as well as school administration preparation and counseling. So in the midst of all of it, all the way up and down, and truly have made a commitment to the board. It's been challenging at times to stay involved and make the commitment, but I have to say the board really has grown and is strong. We have a really strong executive director in the position right now, Janet Moore, who has a great background in K-12. The board has great potential. If you look at our mission and purpose, we are very intent on the quality and high standards for licensure, as well as continuing to support quality administrators and meeting those needs in our K-12 schools. We've started initiating some work. What I'd like to do during this third term is continue some work that we've begun, especially around principal professional development. We have framed a system that would really heighten the quality, not only with our licensure prep programs, but also continuing that support as school administrators move into those challenging roles.
And you have such a program as her at Minnesota State Mankato.
Absolutely, and it's we're seeing the results of that, and we definitely are engaged as a college in both the teacher prep and school leadership. We know there's not enough time and that it can't just be doing the preparation part and then stepping back. We've really built some strong relationships with K-12, and we have a really strong principal professional development program that builds and continues to provide that support that educators need.
Thank you. Questions of Dean Haar? Senator Torres-Ray, and followed by Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Haar, I am curious about your opinion about the efforts that the schools are doing and, in general, the efforts that we have in Minnesota to recruit people from diverse backgrounds. And could you tell me what is your commitment to that? I think some of us are very frustrated with the lack of diversity within that pool of
yes,
professionals.
We are as well. Sure. We have actively engaged. I can give an example of what we're doing at Minnesota State Mankato. Through our involvement with the Bush Foundation Initiative, actually at the beginning of that initiative, we chose to create and hired a person in the College of Ed for recruitment. We have a maverick recruiter who has the specific intent of that role is to recruit students of color or other underrepresented areas, and how do we get them into the teaching profession? It's challenging. 3 years later, our numbers, we were at 2% diverse candidates. We're at maybe 9. But those numbers, if you look at the dynamics of what we have for candidates, is small. There's huge challenges and barriers. One is what I've realized is not only do you have to recruit, but then you have to build the right kind of environment in higher ed to support those candidates as they move through, because what we typically have done in teacher prep or even in school leadership prep has been pretty specific to our normal candidacy, of which is largely Caucasian. So we have been having to think about what and how can we reframe a prep program at both levels that supports those diverse candidates and helps them feel comfortable and that we respond to their needs as they understand and prepare in a way that they can step into school and be successful. Because not only is it challenging for them to think about and move through the prep, but I have found then even when they step into K-12, the challenges oftentimes, because they might be the sole diverse principal or teacher in a school, gets pretty lonely. So how do you, again, create an environment where they have the ongoing support and the mentoring they need? So there's still huge hurdles. What I would encourage us to do and what would be helpful is any kind of legislation or support that recognizes that and invest in the time and energy it takes, because that takes a lot of people and investment in time in creating that. You can't have them step into a program and be one of 100. We need to, for example, at Mankato, we've created a Teachers of Tomorrow program. That program specifically provides opportunities to help them with their coursework, to help them understand what it is that they're experiencing in the prep programs, what it is that they're experiencing when they go out and have those field experiences, trying to sort through that and understand the environment they're going to step into.
Thank you. Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You mentioned the teacher or the principal professional development going on at Mankato State. We've had quite a bit of discussion around that, allocating some funds to Mankato State's, mm-hmm. I'm sorry, Minnesota State Mankato.
There you go.
I'm an old timer.
That's all right. As long as you get Mankato in there, you're
okay. Anyway, and the U of M. And I'm wondering, as you're going through this development and in your role on the Board of School Administrators, What do you see as the glaring needs, and how will your role on the board help move us closer to satisfying those needs?
The Board of School Administrators created a principal redesign system, and we have that all mapped out, and it demonstrates what Mankato has implemented. In fact, some of why Mankato has the principal professional development program it does, which is focused on equity and specifically around race, is a couple of those faculty and ed leadership engaged in the preliminary work for the BOSA on making this plan. If you look at the plan, it maps out what has to happen in preparation programs for school leaders to address the challenges that they're facing in schools, and then it doesn't stop when they finish that licensure program, but it connects to that ongoing professional development. It's a huge challenge for a beginning teacher. It's a big and a stiff and a high, steep cliff that they have to climb up quickly to become a professional with all the demands happening in schools. It's as equally challenging when you first step into your school leadership role for that first time, and they need that ongoing support and preparation. So they need to be able to come back and meet with others who are in the same situation. Plus, they need that reinforcement and what is important and how do you stay focused and intent on what and how you need to lead in order to have a school focus on addressing that opportunity gap versus getting consumed with the day-to-day demands of school leadership. So that's my hope, is that we can take Mankato has started demonstrating that it can happen. The Board of School Administrators has that ability, and we have the individuals on the board who understand that. That if we could have, it's challenging because we have one position in the Board of School Administrators, our executive director, and then everything that gets done truly is volunteer time. It's amazing to me, and the reason I stay engaged in this board is because all of the board members don't just show up for the meeting once a month. We have given endless hours above and beyond to try to address what are the needs that need to be met around those expectations in the Board of School Administrators. Not only in prep programs, we do all of the review for every higher ed administration prep program. We have to reflect on all the continuing ed units that school leaders commit to. And then what are the other needs? We address all the discipline issues. It's a huge responsibility.
Thank you.
Senator Claussen, followed by Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. But Dean Haar, you've served multiple terms on the board.
Yes, I have.
And I'm just wondering if you could give us your reflections as you look back to those early years and perhaps some of the trends you've seen or changes that you've seen over time, and maybe a few comments in that area.
Around the board and its work?
Yes. Please.
We've grown immensely as a board. When I my first term, it probably still was very much understanding what the Board of School Administrators was, and not to default any of that work, but it was probably more management as far as just who are we and just keeping things day-to-day done. But during the course of the time I've been on the term, we entered and went through rulemaking. As a volunteer program, we had no additional support or financial support to do that. That was an eye-opener. I learned a whole new dynamic about what that means. And there was a lot of lost time, though, with doing it that way, where we could have done things more efficiently and accurately if we would have had some more guidance and financial support to do it correctly. I think we've been through three or four executive directors during the time. And that challenge in itself to have the leadership and the continuity you need in an advisory board is challenging. But I really do feel like the executive director we've hired now is strong and has guided us much in leadership, and we are on the right track. I'm projecting, and for instance, that principal redesign plan I mentioned, there's the opportunity to allow the Board of School Administrators to be a leader versus being a manager. And we can do much to ensure that we're heightening school leadership across the state if we can implement such a plan.
Mr. Clausen.
But Dean, your comments remind me of my days as a principal being a manager and an educational leader and trying to balance those two roles. So thank you for your comments.
You're welcome.
Senator Johnson.
Mr. Chair and Ms. Haar, and thank you, Senator Torres-Ray, for asking your question, because it prompted a memory that I've kept for the last two or three years, and that was when we had our meeting, Senator Weaker had called the meeting to invite all the teachers of the year to talk about their position and why they were considered to be very excellent teachers. This teacher from St. Louis Park, and she was the, if I recall right, she was the only black person of color that was in the group. And the question was asked by me, asked her why some of the black kids are not as successful as they should be, and she talked about it. And she used the word, and it was a very scary word to me, was institutional racism. Mm. And I'm wondering if you have ever done any discussion of that, or if you do that on your board in terms of thinking not just of teachers but principals and superintendents and so forth, no role models for these children. How can we expect students to want to be teachers if they are being, if they feel that they are being discriminated against in the school?
What the board would need to do is we need to look at policies and procedures. I can talk as an example of the College of Ed. We have realized our admissions processes and some of the things we look at maybe aren't accurate. If we're only going to look at GPA, that's not going to allow the diversity to change within our candidate pool. And that's not to say that we don't have high expectations, but I think those individuals, there's still a lot of gaps with experiences and opportunities for individuals, and a number of individuals that end up in that non-represented group don't have the right kinds of experiences. They need nurturing and expectations. So we have created at Mankato an admissions policy where we're going to guide them and provide the support for registration so they can have the same classes together again and then reinforce the teachers of tomorrow. The Board of School Administrators needs to look at our rules, I think, and what are the expectations and what are school administration prep programs doing to heighten the diversity within the candidate pool for principals, superintendents, directors of school, special ed, et cetera. That doesn't happen without intentionality is what I've realized. So it takes some work. You have to do the recruitment, and then you have to do a number of things for retention. Just, again, an example of what we did recently, I think it was 2 weeks ago, we had a conference around school leadership and racial equity at our Edina site, and we had 4 superintendents of color on a panel, and they talked about how intense and how challenging that work is. Those are the individuals we need to connect with our school leader preparation candidates so they can hear and understand what it is that needs to be done differently. And again, if they don't have the role models, they're never going to think or see themselves in some of those roles.
Mr. Chair, if I might just make
you
one comment, please.
Yes, and we probably should get to the other nominee. We appreciate the 9 questions that have been posed so far, and I assume you will want to also ask the same ones.
I'd love to come
the next
sometime
nominee.
And just visit.
Right, but let's continue, Senator Johnson, followed by Senator Bonhoff and anyone else, and we can meet later, too.
Mr. Chair, I don't need a response for this. I just want to share also another interaction I had with a black teacher, and she suggested that it's time for the white people to sit down and say, what's wrong with us? Why are we doing this? What is going on? And so I just ask you to consider that as a possible
action.
Thank you. Senator Bonhoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dean, I just wanted to thank you for your comments. We've been having these kinds of exploratory conversations with University of Minnesota because their student population is not as diverse as the community in which they serve. And so their responses to date have centered around the way they admit students, but I think you point to it's really important to have a broader set of criteria when looking at admissions policies.
That's correct. Thank you.
Any further questions or comments? Okay, thank you. Dean Haar will entertain a motion following our presentation from Ms. Antoine. Welcome, and if you could similarly highlight your reasons and perhaps include your responses to questions that have been posed, which I'm sure would be equally shared for you as well.
Sure. Thank you for having us here today. My name is Nancy Antoine. Currently, I'm the elementary principal, one of the elementary principals in Northfield, and so I serve a K-5 population, and I have about 600 students. If I back up a step, one of the reasons I'm in education is because someone said I couldn't. When I went to graduate from high school, I am a biracial person. My dad is black. My mom is white. And my high school counselor told me that your kind of people go into the military. And I said, I'm graduating number 4 in my class. I'm not going to the military. I'm going to a 4-year college. Oh, no, your type go to the military. I ignored him because when someone says I can't, I do, and I will. And so that is why I'm in education. It wasn't because I had that special teacher that fostered that in myself. It was because in order for me to get a seat on the bus every single day, I needed to help my classmates with their math because I love math and I could do it. And so I got a seat on the bus every day because I was helping my friends complete their math homework. And oh my goodness, when they had algebra questions, I was so excited because that was my favorite and I could help them with that. I had an hour-long bus ride to school every single day, and to stand on the bus would not have been fun. So to get my seat on that bus, I helped them every single day. So I was teaching long before I had a teaching degree and a license. So that was exciting. Going on, I did major in math, and I have a teaching license to teach math. I've done all of my teaching inner city. I started out in Texas, down by the Mexican border, and the majority of my students spoke Spanish as their first language, and the majority of my students were Latinos, and it was absolutely fantastic. After 3.5 years there, I did come back to Minnesota. I was told that you'll never get a job working in Minneapolis again. you don't get what you don't apply for. So I applied for a job and was offered a position teaching math at a middle school in Minneapolis. Thoroughly loved my work teaching inner city. I went to try to go into administration in Minneapolis, and again met a wall. And again, that's why I moved into the elementary setting and have really thoroughly enjoyed being an elementary principal, and that is currently what I'm doing. The work on the Board of School Administrators, I think when I boil this down, it's about doing right by our children. Doing right by our children that will be our leaders tomorrow. You know, in every policy that we look at, I see faces of children. I don't see just words there. I see the children. And the work we do is fantastic every single day. I'm also on the board of directors for the Minnesota Elementary School Principals Association. In July, I will become the president-elect of the Minnesota Elementary Principals Association. I'm also on the MDE steering force for the looking at teacher equity to ensure that we've got that our students of color in our state are not taught predominantly by students who are out of the areas of licensure and with first year teachers or unlicensed teachers. So that's another role that I play. I'm also on the Minnesota Teacher of the Year judging panel. That has been fantastic to take a look at those that group of energy. Oh my goodness, they you can just see how much value that they bring to their classrooms. It is just fantastic. But one of the questions I've asked them is, what's missing in your teacher licensure program that would help you, especially in terms of how do we prepare our next round of teachers for teaching in the inner city? How do we prepare them for the classrooms of tomorrow that they will have? How do we have them look at things differently? One of the questions I always ask is, do our students really need to be seated to learn? That seems to be one of the old paradigms that, you know, you need to sit down and learn. Sit down and be quiet and learn. I'm sorry, but I don't think that there is a direct relation between your derriere and your brain. So I think that students can get up and learn. So this is quite an honor. I really, truly enjoy being on the Board of School Administrators. I also enjoy being in a leadership position with our administrators across the state. When I look at my building right now, yes, I am the only person of color in my building. And one of the challenges in being a person of color in administration is looking for jobs in a community that will be accepting of of your own family. When I look at moving my family to even Northfield, you know, some of the questions I ask was, is this going to be an acceptable community for my family? Because I refuse to put my family through what I went through as a child. And I have the choice now of saying, no, that's not going to work for my family. I will stand in the gap for my family. And it's been a great experience for my entire family, and I am so thrilled to be able to raise my children in the community. So I digress, but this is why I'm here today. It's because of children.
Well, very inspiring, and yeah. You're also a coach, a Bible school teacher, Spanish immersion. You've got quite a package there.
Thank you.
So let's open up for any questions, Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Ms. Antoine, for your willingness to serve on this volunteer position. And I know I talked to you earlier, your reasons for not being here before. You had like three big projects going on, a learning fair and 10 other things. But I just appreciate your showing up today. And my son was asking if you get a little extra recess today.
Depends if it's raining or not. Okay. If it's not raining, sure, we'll get that in.
Further questions, comments, Senator Pratt.
Thank you. Well, first of all, I want to reiterate what Senator Dahl said. I think his son should get extra recess. And I'll vote in favor of this motion if he does. But, I'd like to ask you the same question I asked Ms. Haar. What are the needs that you see in principal development, and how do you see your role on the board helping to move that along?
One of the major roles I see in principal development is mentorship. And one of the programs that I attended was the Minnesota Principals Academy, and that was one of the best programs that I attended, because it gives you much more of a global perspective on education. And I just think that that whole piece of mentorship cannot go unnoticed, because without that, without being able to pick up the phone and call another one of my colleagues and say, you know, how have you dealt with this problem, you're alone. You're it for many of the issues. Tuesday night after the choir concert got finished, I was sitting there for the next hour and a half dealing with the discipline issue. And there was you're it for making that decision, and you have to know that you're making the correct decision. And not always do you have the answers for every single thing that comes your way. And so it comes down to making the right decision for the children. Not for what's comfortable for me. If it was comfortable for me, I would have jumped up and left and gone home. But that wasn't what was important. What was important was doing right by that child. So when I look at that mentorship piece, I think it would have been wonderful for the first 5 years as being a building principal if I would have had a mentor that could have worked with me side by side, walked with me, not pushing me out the door or trying to make me feel bad about the things that I do wrong, but also that mentorship and leadership.
Thank you. Senator Pratt.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And so let me just kind of follow up on the second part of the question. How do you see your role on the Board of Teaching being able to get to that role when we've talked about Principal Institute in so many different ways?
Mm-hmm. And part of how I get to that is through the Elementary Principals Association in terms of designing programs and designing learning opportunities for the other principals in across our state, and ensuring that they have the pieces that they need. It also comes down to asking people, what do you need? Really, not thinking that we know everything, but taking the time to step back and ask other people, what is it you need? Because in different parts of our state, people need different things. After being an administrator in Worthington, our needs there were extremely different than they were in Robbinsdale, and extremely different than they were where I grew up on the North Shore. So when you look at the needs, they are different.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Further questions of either nominee? If not, we'll entertain a motion for Dean Haar. Senator Claussen?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I move that we adopt Dean Haar to the board, and I'd like to just say thank you for your service.
Thank you. We may not be able to adopt her, but we'll certainly recommend her.
we're adopting her
here. Okay. On that motion, further discussion? All in favor indicate aye.
Aye.
Carried. Senator Dahl.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would like to move the confirmation of Nancy Antoine to the Board of School Administrators.
On that motion, further discussion? Not all in favor indicate aye.
Aye.
Motion carried. Thank you very much for your service and the recommendations we forwarded to the Senate floor for action.
Thank you very much.
The next on the agenda is the board for the Minnesota State Academies. Christopher Pepper is not able to be here. We did have very good testimony regarding his service. He's with Wells Fargo. I believe he's in San Francisco on business. We will wait until another day. I don't think it puts his appointment at risk, but he would have had to have flown back, and I think that would have been unreasonable to demand that, and would hope you would agree. The next confirmation for the Board of Teaching is Jim Grabowska, and Jim's been here since a little after 8 o'clock, so welcome, and please state your name for the tape and a bit about your background and perhaps addressing some of the current discussions about streamlining the licensure process, testing, and then we'll open up for any questions. Welcome.
Welcome. Yes. Good morning, Mr. Chair, and ladies and gentlemen of the committee. My name is Jim Grabowska. It's sort of a chuckle to go through the confirmation process at this particular point because I've been serving on the board now for 3 years. But the wheels turn slowly, and so this is my opportunity in order to sit in front of you. I come to the Board of Teaching from a variety of paths. So I, too, am at Minnesota State Mankato. I have been in the Department of World Languages and Cultures for 17 years, have been involved in teacher preparation. In fact, that was the reason for my hire at MSU Mankato, because the licensure rules had changed from a secondary license for world language teachers to a K-12 license, and that was a background that I happened to have. I also serve on the I serve on a number of different boards, but the Region 9 Development Commission, the South Central Service Cooperative, and my current role, I'm not in the classroom at this particular point. I'm the president of the interfaculty organization, so leading the state faculty in the seven state universities. During the last 3 years on the board, I have seen a board that has developed that is very interested, despite the lawsuit that is pending, to make significant changes in the board, among those expanding the pathways to licensure. I will recognize that this is not something that happens in a big hurry. It is something that happens slowly. But I have seen, for example, in terms of the development of the MTLEs, which were the exams that were developed to measure competency, first of all, the general exams and then the content-specific exams, move from cut scores that were so prohibitively high that people, even who have dedicated their professional careers, such as myself, to those content areas, having difficulty passing those exams. And it was the board took the initiative to re-examine those cut scores and make them what I would particularly consider reasonable. We've also been dealing with the discussion about alternative pathways, as I mentioned, including portfolio processes. One of the organizations that has appeared over the past several years, at least during my tenure on the board, has been Teach for America, and my path to licensure as a teacher was through a similar process, not through Teach for America, but a similar process when I was hired in the state of South Dakota to teach. I did not have licensure at the time. I had my bachelor's degree, and I had it in English and sociology, but I had had spent several years living in Spain. So I was hired to teach Spanish, and at the same time, the institution from which I had graduated, Northern State University in Aberdeen, South Dakota, supported me through that year. So during that particular year, I was observed 7 to 10 times. through supporting faculty at Northern and the administrative staff in the high school in which I was teaching, as well as taking coursework at the same time in order to get to licensure. So I was under contract. I was getting paid. I was teaching students. I was being supported. And at the end of that year, I was a licensed teacher in the state. Unfortunately, South Dakota changed the rules with regard to requiring a world language, so I was RIFT. And I came to the state of Minnesota and was teaching in Osakis and Sauk Center. And at that particular point in time, these are small districts that don't have the kinds of resources to offer the variety of curricula that we would like to see in all schools. And so I stopped out to get a master's degree and to reevaluate my opportunities in terms of teaching, where I fell in love and left the profession entirely and came back a university professor. Nevertheless, the alternative pathway was the one that that I took in order to licensure, and I have been vocal about that on the board. I've seen a board that is very intent on upholding the quality that Minnesota is known for in terms of its teachers, but at the same time looking for alternative paths and looking for alternative means and trying to create opportunities for people to enter in the profession and, at least as importantly, stay within the profession. So those are my experiences on the board over the last number of years and sort of mixed in with a little background of who I might be.
Good. Thank you very much for the outline and for your 3 years of service thus far. Senator Bonhoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Welcome, Mr. Grabowska. We obviously have a relationship, as I appreciate your leadership role in the higher ed world.
Thank you very much.
So moving from that to this conversation, number one, on behalf of the Senate. I'm sorry that it's taken 3 years to have this conversation. I don't know what happens to have that occur, but obviously we should talk to people as they come through the process earlier. Again, I don't know how that happens. But, you know, I have a bad taste in my mouth from the experience of sitting beside teachers who were trying to get those exceptions and one-year waivers as part of the Teach for America program and had the misfortune of having to listen to many different members of the Board of Teaching talk about why they didn't believe in alternative licensure after it had already become law. Mm-hmm. And so I'm sure you probably heard I had you know, many questions of Ms. Bauman when she was there, and I assume that's why you addressed that. But as a member of the board, how could that happen? I mean, how could actually, and you started with your comments saying that things happen slowly. And I take exception to that because when a law passes, I feel as though those who are entrusted to implement the law don't have a choice about the speed in which that happens. So could you comment on that?
Mr. Chair.
Yes, sir.
Senator Bono. It's a great question, but I don't believe that the answer is very simple. It is really quite complicated. If you have not had the opportunity to ever attend a Board of Teaching meeting, I would certainly invite any and all of you to do so. We actually have one tomorrow. So the board will be getting together, and I have as homework, I started last night, but as homework, the bulk of it today is going to be reviewing about 80 applications for waivers, non-licensed community experts, all of the different situations that school districts face in trying to get people into the classroom. So it's not a simple wave of the hand. The documents that we see, so I mentioned these 80. We receive a cover sheet that indicates the position for which they are looking, their qualifications in that area, looking for support from the institution, whether or not they are licensed in a particular area, whether or not they're pursuing licensure in an area. We get a cover letter from the individual applicant. We also get their resume. And so each one of the members of the board takes that information and uses that in order to evaluate and come to some decision as to whether or not that individual is going to be a fit for a classroom. Now, I come from a rural district. There are two of us that are on the board that are from rural Minnesota. I was very interested in the conversation that was taking place with regard to Dean Haar and the other candidate. I know Dean Haar, obviously, our offices are close together, and I've worked with the College of Education in Mankato for a long time. In rural Minnesota, the vast majority of both teachers, administrators, and students look like I do. And we have a very difficult time attracting teachers to rural schools. Now, I'm not dancing around. I'm going to get there. But the fact of the matter is that in this evaluative process, it is true that schools, because they are desperate to find somebody to put them in the classroom, are willing to make arguments that cause consternation around the board. Because I speak Spanish does not make me a Spanish teacher. So, for example, when I take a look tomorrow or tonight at the candidates who are applying for these positions, and I see somebody is fluent in Spanish, but they neither have the background in education nor are they entered into a teaching program, then I have to sit back and I say, are they going to be a good fit for working with those children and able to deliver that content? Now, if you're referring specifically, and you mentioned TFA in particular, I'm a fan. You won't get an argument from me. I'm an example of what TFA was trying to do. TFA, and I am not an authority on the history. I know that TFA has had a rocky relationship with the Board of Teaching, but that was generally prior to my arrival to the board. That has been smoothing out, and that largely is a process of effective communication between, for example, the executive director of TFA and the board. It's also not uncommon for us to receive, because schools and school administrators are busy, applications that are less than complete, that leave gaps. And so it's not infrequent that the board may table some action pending further information so that they can make an informed decision. So all of this to say that the answer to the question isn't an easy one, and it isn't simply because I present myself as such that we automatically make a decision and we trust that. We look quite deeply before making that decision.
Thank you.
Follow-up? Okay, Senator Torres Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am very interested in your background and really appreciate a lot of the work that you've been doing in terms of international cultural exchanges. And I have been invited to participate in multiple conversations about how we can elevate the teaching profession and just really work on figuring out how do we offer incentives to teachers. And this conversation about international cultural exchanges have become a very interesting conversation for those who are interested in global education. And I wanted to ask if you have been able to talk about that, if that has been a conversation that the board has had. I see that you've done cultural cooperations between Spain, and you also have a green paper that I'm very interested in getting a copy of. And so could you tell us a little bit about, you know, is that a direction you think the board is taking? Have you been able to bring that perspective to the board in any way?
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, Senator Torres Rey, thank you for reading that information. It might be worth your while when you invite Dean Haar to come back and talk informally sometime. The Department of KSP at Minnesota State actually has a program that takes students, now here speaking in particular about Spanish, to Costa Rica during the summer and to have those students work in a Costa Rica school and develop their skills working in an intercultural environment, which I consider exceptionally important. The green paper that the senator was referring to was during my sabbatical year. I was affiliated with a university in Ecuador, and I was invited by an organization to write a paper about the state of education in the country of Ecuador and how Ecuador is trying to internationalize, as many countries are. So I also, within my department, we attract a lot of our graduate students from other countries who come here and begin to work and are attracted to the teaching profession. It's really, again, a very interesting topic because, and I'll stay focused on Spanish for a moment. Ms. Antoine was talking about the Latinos with whom she worked in Texas. The Latinos with whom I have worked here in the state of Minnesota have come to higher education feeling that their backgrounds and their experience are less than whole, so that they do not feel valued. They do not their Spanish is not something about which to be proud. They are prouder of their ability to communicate in English and look and act like the majority population at the university. And so something that we've worked very hard on within our Department of World Languages and Cultures at MSU is to authorize their Latino-ness. That is to say that they have value, that they have something that actually is exceptional, and that is a value that they can add in a school classroom. Invariably, the letters of recommendation that I write talk about the fact that these students coming through language programs, but in not exclusively language programs, are exemplary manifestations of what it can be mean to be intercultural, and that they can bring that to other students as they move out. It would be Worthington was mentioned again by Ms. Antoine, and you have an international population there that is extraordinary. And I've had any number of students who have come through from Worthington and have discovered that by having something that is exceptional, something that is of value, something that people are searching for, that they become excited about the profession, and they look forward to taking that and using that in the classroom as a vehicle to reach other students, but not just other Latinos. Too frequently, I think, in the discussion about, and there was a question earlier about institutional racism, too frequently we tend to focus our conversations on reaching only those students of who look like us or come with similar backgrounds to us. But what I would like to do is expand that conversation so that the students that don't necessarily look like me or that have a different background can contribute as much to those students who are, say, the majority students, the students that look like me, can contribute to their development and their perspective on the world and their ability to interact with others as they grow up and they leave the institution, as they can to those who we are trying to develop and who may be struggling in school, in particular, say, for example, within the metro area or metropolitan areas where you see larger diverse populations.
Thank you. Senator Pratt, followed by Senator Claussen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, a comment. I want to just thank you for bringing Ms. Stone on as executive director. She's been more engaging with the legislature this year than I recall in my first biennium, and I really appreciate having her around. I want to get back to Senator Bonoff's question a little bit, and I apologize for missing your opening remarks, but I got the sense that the Board of Teaching, is, in your mind, moves slowly and deliberately, and I can appreciate that. I served on a school board, as you do, but you also know that when the legislature passes a new law, that your school administrators jump to in order to comply with it by the date that's established. And we had quite a bit of I had quite a bit of discussion with Ms. Bauman around the fact that I think the Board of Teaching has been too slow in adjusting to particularly out-of-state teachers coming in with experience. And I use the example, my mother came to this state with 14 years of experience teaching in four different states. She has a lifetime license in California, and yet even back in the 70s, she struggled to get into this state. And where do you see the value on experience versus just the value of an academic resume?
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Grabowski.
Senator, it's a great question. And it's one, again, not easily answered. I went through the same experience. I was licensed in a state with reciprocity with the state of Minnesota, in particular the course in human relations. When I came to the state of Minnesota, I was given a provisional license because I had human relations but not delivered in the state of Minnesota. Yeah. So I had to take a course in human relations here. Followed, I moved to Oklahoma. Oklahoma had the title of the course was different, and because the title of the coursework that I had didn't have the same title, I had to take the course again. If I had gone to Texas, I would have had to have picked up a course in Texas history. Okay, this and that's the path to licensure. So what I'm trying to do is, in terms of statutes, we react to the statutes, and the statutes change. They change by changes in the composition of the committees, changes by the composition of political parties, changes by the different ideologies that help inform them. And so I will admit that I would love to see the board more nimble, but I would also say that it's not simply reducible to the Board of Teaching taking action. We have to respond to all of you. We have to respond to our constituents. We have to respond to the applications that we get and the degree to which that they are completed. And I emphasize that because this is something that I see frequently, that and I understand how busy people are. I understand that. I continually say that I'm the second busiest person on the planet because everybody else is the busiest. But the applications that we see so frequently are not complete. And if I don't have a complete application, then it's difficult for me to make a decision. Now, you mentioned, Senator, the idea of experience and whether or not experience is enough. Well, that is determined by others. And that is, it is determined by, frequently, by statute that indicates that, no, experience is not enough, that in order to be a teacher in the state of Minnesota, you have to have this, you have to have that, and you have to have the other thing. And we react to that. We have to react to that. So I think that, and I too, by the way, ditto exactly what you say with regard to Erin Doan. She's been awesome. I would welcome continuing conversations about how we can streamline the process. I'm sure everybody here has read the statutes with regard to teaching, and they don't get any shorter, and they don't get any simpler. To have that kind of conversation in order to address those needs and in order to get to where at least a number of the members of this committee are interested in getting, which is a streamlined process. We're interested. We're working toward it. We've made some changes. But we have to react to a number of different constituents, and we are not a body that is capable of taking the kind of initiative without the guidance that we have through legislation, through law.
I got to find out.
Senator Pratt?
Mr. Chair, I just want to comment that be happy to work with the Board of Teaching to streamline this, because I think we've got bipartisan support that this board needs to be more nimble, and if there are statutory hurdles in your way, let us help remove them.
I'd welcome that, and I'm sure the board would welcome that. And I believe, Mr. Chair, we have a Erin, when is our retreat?
July 9th.
So we have a retreat coming up in July, and I'm sure that there would be space in that retreat to have fruitful conversations. I'd welcome them.
Well, appreciate that invitation. Senator Claussen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. Grabowska, thank you very much for your service. One of the things that I just want to comment on is that a lot of people don't realize that if you want to hire an unlicensed teacher, the school district also has to provide documentation. So that's another piece of the process that sometimes we don't do a good job of as well. So just kind of letting people know more of the involvement of this. But my question is, we have a license bill before us that we've been working on this session. One of the things we're doing, and you mentioned license by portfolio, and we're kind of moving that into the Board of Teaching realm more so than it has been sitting with the Department of Education to some degree. I'm wondering if you see any other situations like that where you might say there's redundancy or there may be a duplication that's taking place between the Board of Teaching and the Department of Education.
Mr. Chair, Senator Claussen, I'm not competent to answer that question. I would have to ask Aaron about that. And I'm going to make a shameful pitch right now. $617,000 isn't enough to staff the Board of Teaching in order to deal with portfolios, in order to deal with the exceptions to the rule, and in order to deal with licensing. I can't answer the question about redundancy, but I can tell you that the staff does Herculean work with what they have been given. And part of the streamlining process may be you have a staff of six. Is that right, Aaron? So six, including the executive director. And that isn't enough, given the volume that we have to deal with. And so portfolio process, I think, is great. I'm actually a proponent of the EdTPA, which is, I believe, exceptional. It's not being used for licensure right now, but it is certainly very insightful and I think probably a better measure than any exam that exists. But that is going to require resources. That is going to require manpower.
Thank and you. Dr. Grabowska, certainly it's not shameful to make a plea for the need. We're aware of it. We have an additional $100,000 in addition to the base in the Senate proposal, plus some additional funds on projects. So, you know, we are very aware of the increased responsibilities, and you need the tools to do that. I think this has been very helpful, and members, we have this room for just a few more minutes, but we can certainly meet at another time if you'd like to continue this discussion. Sarah Bonoff, you have a motion?
Yes, I would move the confirmation of Mr. Grabowska.
Further discussion? If not, all in favor, indicate aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion adopted. Thank you very much for your service. We will look forward to the continued dialogue, and
thank you all.
Thank you for being back here. Senator Dahl.
Mr. Chair, was it just Christopher Pepper on this list on the agenda that it was not confirmed, or was it Stephen Daly also?
In addition to Christopher Pepper, I mentioned he's at Wells Fargo. He's on the State Academy's board in Faribault. He's in San Francisco. He couldn't, you know, for business, you know, this is volunteer work, but it was maybe Senator Pratt can appreciate the many responsibilities, which I know you try to balance. But he couldn't fly in for today's hearing. But I told them I did not think his appointment was at risk. And may I assume that? But we can have him come in. And the others, we did not hear from Thomas Adams or Stephen Daly from the Purpich Center. They did have excuses, but we did not hear from them yet.
Mr. Chair. And I don't know if it's the will of this committee that Again, these are volunteer positions. They're not commissioners, as we've confirmed in many other committees. I really doubt that we would have them in and vote them down. I heard good things about at least Christopher Pepper and others. Would it be possible in order to confirm those others at this time to save us some time and convenience?
Well, Senator Dahl, I would concur if there's unanimity on our committee. If there's not, I don't want to hear this grandstanded on the floor that we did not hear from them. I totally agree with you. I wish we could confirm Ms. Pepper, but we can meet, and I'm going to admonish that we have a quorum, and if I'll leave it at that, but if there's unanimity, I would be willing to go ahead. If not, we will not. I will have to pull those recommendations on the motion on the floor, but we'll do so in the name of Kumbaya.
Mr. Chair, I don't agree with that. I don't know these individuals, but I just feel that we have some individuals who come here and are questioned for about an hour, and others that will just say, I don't have time to go. And they are treated equally. So if you respond by saying, I don't have the time to go, you get appointed. If you come here and interact with us for an hour, telling us about your background, your interests, you also get appointed. And I just think that's bad practice, so I would like to have them present.
Yes, no, and I'm going to request it. Each of you be here, especially those of you that have spoken so strongly about this. You be here. Okay?
We are here.
Yes, no, but I'll remind
next
you.
Time too.
I will remind you of those times. And these, some of these, and I can date back to when Jen Olson, very ably led the committee, and if there was not controversy in play, particularly someone in Greater Minnesota, there was a trust, and if you can reach out to meet someone. But in that spirit, interview the people, we will hold off on those other recommendations. We will have a closing comment from Senator Pratt. If there's a chance, I'd like to give a conference committee update.
No, that's fine, Mr. Chair. I was just to Senator Torres-Ray, I agree with her. I think Senator Dahl makes a valid point. We could potentially confirm these people and just ask them to come to a meeting next session to introduce themselves, talk about the work they've been doing. One of the reasons I wanted to insist on the Board of Teaching is that we've had a lot of discussion in committee. There's been some controversy around it, and I felt like that was one that we particularly couldn't just push off. But with Purpich School, I think is a little bit different situation, and I could even concur with Senator Dahl and bring those folks in, and let's have them talk to us at another point in time. So, but I certainly understand where Senator Bonhoff and Senator Torres-Ray are coming from as well.
Okay, no, I will respect Senator Bonhoff and Senator Torres-Ray's request that these members from outstate be brought in, and that's what we will do. For a conference committee update,
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Bonhoff.
Mr. Chair, I think another option in today's technology updates, we could certainly have a phone conference with somebody from out of state. I don't think they need to drive all the way down if that doesn't work for them.
There's a number of options, and we'll have staff work on that during the interim.
Thanks.
Thank you for your suggestion. For the conference committee update, we had two meetings so far, 5.5 hour side-by-sides, and yesterday there was a presentation regarding the Senate provisions for facilities, QCOMP, and testing. I thought it was a very good discussion, and today the conference committee meets to review extended support revenue and early learning scholarships. Until we get budget targets, it's going to be difficult to focus in too much, but
there's a lot of the background information's been presented. I would expect that next week, maybe before, but when we get targets, that it'll start to get closer to a resolution. So I appreciate your participation on that. If anyone has questions, please let me know, and appreciate everyone's involvement on that. There being no further business, the committee is adjourned.